about this mysterious sugya of mitzvah sirchas kavana. The sugya that our Gemara seems committed to preserving the mystery of. So just, we took this line in our Gemara as an opportunity to talk about this major Shas topic, the question of whether mitzvos are only considered to be fulfilled if we do them with intent for the mitzvah. And we started to explain, we left it kind of a breaking point last time, and started to explain that even though we have on the surface two opinions, either that mitzvahs do require kavana or that they don't, it could be that they share a common point. That it's possible to argue that really everyone agrees that mitzvahs need kavana. Just the question is that maybe one might say mitzvahs don't need kavana because there is a presumed kavana, because there is a default kavana. And to make this point, some have borrowed an expression from the beginning of the Gemara Maseches Vachen, stama lishma. Perhaps the presumption, just like the presumption of a karban is, as a karban is with the intent required for a karban, multiple intents, the Gemara says, six different kavanas one needs to have, but the default presumption is that the kavana is there. So too, when it comes to a mitzvah, maybe a mitzvah presumes a proper intent for the mitzvah. So if that's the case, so then it opens up the possibility that really we do need kavana according to everyone. It's just the question of whether that kavana has to be externally provided or whether the kavana is presumed. Now, we discussed a little bit in explaining this, the fact that the Nogi Behuda, one of his tshuvas, was very opposed to recitation of L'shem Yichud. So that's to say, before you do a mitzvah, L'shem Yichud Kudshav Yichud, it's as if to imply that if you're not saying that, it's not L'shem Yichud. And that's not our assumption. Our assumption is that mitzvahs are presumably done L'shem Mitzvah. So to go out of your way to say it is as if to imply that if I'm not saying it is not the case, and that was incorrect, he argued. Sorry, this is one of his major points of opposition with the Hasidim. Behuda is one of the great misnagdim, opposed this process of saying L'shem Yichud. He said that this idea that I need to declare my kavana undermines our general presumption that mitzvos are done with inherent kavana.
What does Yichud mean here?
So it's like you're saying that
the oneness?
Yeah, well, literally that's what it means. It means that I'm doing this in honor as a dedication to God's unity. So that's what's driving me to do the mitzvah, as if otherwise, if I didn't say it, that wouldn't be the case. The Behuda felt that was an objectionable thing to do based on that. So this has major implications because of the following question. So what if I not only don't have Kavanas Mitzvah, but I have negative Kavana, what's known as Kavana Hafachis. I have opposite, reverse Kavana. And I'm saying that I do not want to be Yotzei Mitzvah with my action. So would that negate the Mitzvah? And why would I do this? Not necessarily because I'm anti-religious, but let's say the circumstances are not ideal right now for the Mitzvah. So I'm doing an action which the details conform to the requirements of the Mitzvah, but I don't want it to be the Mitzvah. Because if it's going to be the Mitzvah, I'm going to fulfill it in a time when it's less than ideal, and I'd rather do the mitzvah ideally. I'll give you an example. So Friday night, if you go to shul Friday night, let's assume for a second, just to complicate things a little bit less, let's assume they don't make kiddush in shul, but they daven ma'ariv in shul. So you daven ma'ariv in shul, so many felt that that fulfills the Torah requirement of Zohar Shema Shabbos L'Kadshah. On a Daraisa level. So, yes, you still have to go home and make Kiddush at your dinner table, Kiddush Makom Suda, in order to fulfill the din de rabbanan, you have to make kiddush al yayin and kiddush makom suda, but kiddush daraisi yotze. Now there was a whole discussion that if one assumes that that's the case, it was the view of the Magen Avraham, so then maybe that creates a technical problem, which we won't get into in detail right now, but maybe that creates a technical problem for a man to be motzi his wife, because the same note of Yehuda we just mentioned a minute ago, but in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, the Dagam Ravava, so he felt it was a problem for a man to be motzi his wife in Kiddush, if he really was Yotzei in Shul, so he's only Chayiv Rabbanan, and his wife is Chayiv in HaTorah, because men and women are equally Chayiv in Kiddush. So there are a number of approaches to that question. There are reasons not necessarily to worry about it, but there are those who maintain, such as the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer has two different shuvas about this, where he says it a little bit differently in the two places, but the Chassam Sofer assumes that one has negative kavana in shul, that one has the intent not to be Yotzei. He says it two different ways. In one place he says that you have negative kavana. Elsewhere he seems to suggest that whether or not you have negative kavana, we presume the negative kavana for you on a communal level. So these expressions, leiv hazdin masna alav, that we have established on behalf of the community negative kavana. Not just because of this question of the Dalgam Ravava, that it puts the man and the wife on unequal footing, but in general, we think it's undesirable to be Yotzei a mitzvah on a Torah level first, and then only later fill in the Rabbanan requirements. In general, we want to do the mitzvah, the Raisa, and the Rabbanan together. So we can have scenarios where a person would not want to fulfill a mitzvah. So let's say you're doing the mitzvah, you're doing all the acts of the mitzvah, all the parts fit, all the requirements are fulfilled, but you declare you don't want to fulfill the mitzvah, kavana hafachis. So would that work? So you'll say, well, it should depend on whether mitzvos need kavana or not. If mitzvos need kavana, so then I can turn off the kavana. But if mitzvos don't need kavana, so then it shouldn't matter. So maybe that's not the case. Maybe you could say it could work according to both opinions. Because yes, if mitzvos need kavana, then fine. But if mitzvahs don't need kavana, maybe what that means is that batteries are included. Maybe it means the kavana is presumed, but if you actively shter the kavana, if you say that I don't want to have kavana, so then you're negating the default. So then you can go in there and sabotage it. And it's just that if you leave it alone, sama lishma. But if you go in and you declare that you don't want it to be the kavana, so then that should perhaps be effective. So a lot of Rishonim thought that was the case. There were a lot of Rishonim who did express that this should work, that negative kavana does negate a mitzvah. Joseph Engel, actually, it's interesting, he has a raya from a Gemara a lot ago, but it's before we started, the Gemara at the end of the first parak, where the Gemara talks about really a different context, but the Rishonim seem to open the door to this discussion. There's a Tosfos that seems to bring things into a whole different context. The Gemara talks about somebody, the Gemara talks about somebody who picks up wine and he thinks it's beer. So a little bit of a difficult 9 days, Gemara. It becomes a more fraught issue. But you take beer, you think it's wine. So the point is, you have one bracha in mind, and it turns out to be the other bracha, and it's a discussion that is shown what it means. You actually said the wrong bracha, and then you changed it to the right bracha, or you had in mind the wrong bracha, and then you actually said the right bracha. So the last line, Tosfos in Lo La'asiyei Nama, Nibbeis Min Aleph, where the Gemara gets into this whole discussion, it's a little complicated back and forth. So towards the end of Tosfos, over there it says Hiksha Harab Ribyakov Mikinun Makami Boyway. What do we care about this whole thing, what you had in mind when you made the bracha? We should only care what you actually said. The Havadai mitzvos ain't trichas kavana. Don't we say, he's assuming here, that mitzvos don't need kavana? Now it's a strange application, because there's a different way of looking at this. This is talking about which mitzvah you have in mind, which text you have in mind when you say something, which is different than the sugya really we're talking about here, that you have awareness of your mitzvah. So it's a whole different application, which itself shows somewhat of the breadth of this topic, that we can assume that they're all under one heading, knowing you're doing a mitzvah and knowing what bracha you want to make when you intend to make a bracha somehow under the same category. But Satosis here says, "V'hayomer hari d'hainu b'shamei tefila achori beis haknesses l'niskavim watzis." We're talking about somebody who hears, when we say mitzvahs don't need kavana, we mean somebody who hears tefila, he's walking behind a shul, and he hears a tefila, and he doesn't have intent to be yotze, then that could work. Aval hecha d'niskavim levarech al hayayin v'nimsa sheicha lo mahani. That here, when he has intent to make a bracha al hagesed, and it turns out that it's the shahakal, it turns out that's the wrong bracha, so then that's no good. So Rav Yosef Engel has an essay about this in his Asna Daraisa, where he says, what do you see from this Tosus? That it's one thing to say you don't need to have active intent. If you have intent for something else, rather than what you're supposed to have intent for, it's not going to work. So he understood that to mean that you can contradict the intent. If you have no intent, so then we'll fill in the right intent for you. But if you have intent for something else, so that's equivalent to negative intent. That's basically saying I'm directing the intent elsewhere, and that negates the act. So it's an interesting sushtel. It's not necessarily the same context, but it comes out with the same conclusion, which we showed already said before. You don't have to necessarily only listen to the Tosfos to say it, but to say that maybe if you have intent to do something else, that's the same thing as saying that you are negating the presumed intent, and that's going to work. While there are other Rishonim, Beis Yosef quotes the Ra'ah, I can put it about Rosh Hashanah like this as well, that say the opposite. They have an expression, Afilu Omei V'Tovech, that even if somebody is standing up and screaming, he's jumping up and down, I do not want to fulfill a mitzvah, whatever you do, keep that mitzvah away from me, it's not going to work if you're fulfilling the rules. If you're doing everything else in order, then the mitzvah is right. Despite your best intentions, the mitzvah is going to count.
How's this going to work with Shomei Kohane?
So it's interesting. You have to tell us in your days. You mean about Shomei Kohane?
I didn't think
that it tells us. In general, so Shomei Kohane normally requires intent. Right, so one would have thought that that could be separate from this whole discussion. That it's one thing to say if I do a mitzvah action by myself, the mitzvah may not require intent. But if I want to fulfill with somebody else, so that itself should require its own intent.
How about the Aniyasomi?
So I mean,
the Rambam.
Right, so according to the Rambam, Aniyasomi is different than Shomei Kohane. Right. Right, so Aniyasomi is itself an act of a bracha. So to speak, it's an act of ditto from whatever the guy was saying before him. So he said a bracha, it's as if he made a bracha. But here, you could have asked on this Tosfos, you could still ask on this Tosfos, then the Tosfos of the one that Rav Yosef Engel was quoting, that you could have said the opposite of what he said. That the situation, somebody be yotzei a bracha because you're listening as you walk past the door, that needs the most kavanah. That, you know, for sure you need to. Right, you would think that, so there's a couple of different difficult points. The Tosfos, you could ask them from a couple of levels. That example where he said that for sure works, you would think maybe for sure doesn't work. The whole context of having in mind the wrong bracha seems different than the context of mitzvah srichas kavana. The latter questions one could ask, and those are all valid questions. As we alluded to before, that the Rambam, we mentioned this last week, that the Rambam, who kind of confuses us further with his position about mitzvah srichas kavana, because he says matzah doesn't need kavana, but shofar does. So there are those who say specifically this point, that in order to be yotzei with somebody else's shofar blowing, I need kavana. But mitzvah by itself, maybe the Rambam's position is doesn't need kavana. So that's normally we assume that in order to be yotzei bracha, you would need kavana. You would need intent in order to fulfill it, and that that should be separate from mitzvah srichos kavana in general. So this is a whole discussion. How exactly does negative kavana fit in? Soloveitchik had an interesting point that Rishonim discussed this in the context of the query, the quandary rather. Quandary, how do you deal with the lulav and esrog problem? Right, so we know that the Gemara says that on the one hand, midagbe nafikbe, that as soon as you pick up an esrog, you're ready yotze. So how do we fulfill the requirement of bracha over las yasa? That it seems to be tricky, but on the one hand, we want to make the bracha immediately before the mitzvah. So it sounds like if I make the bracha before I pick up the esrog, so that's already not over, that's over and over. That's two steps before. Because in general, you make a bracha on food, you make a bracha on mitzvah, you normally want to already be holding the object. But in the context of lulav and esrog, once you pick it up, you're already yotze. So the Rishonim try to figure out, how do we deal with this problem? How do we allow you to make the bracha at the right time, while not having it be too late. It's not too early and it's not too late. It's the exact right second. How do you do it? So our practice is, as a gesture, to turn it upside down. And so that's one of the suggestions you find in the Rishonim. That if you turn the Esrog upside down, so then you can pick it up, but you will not be Yotze because it's not in fulfillment of the requirement of Derech Gedilas, and it's not being held in the proper way. But another suggestion the Rishonim did have is, why don't I just turn off my Kavana until the wrong moment? Why don't I pick it up with negative Kavana? And then, when the time actually comes, so Davish, I'll pick it up, I'll have negative Kavana, I'll make the bracha, and then when the time comes, I'll turn my Kavana back up, and I'll be ready to be Yosef. So Rishonim do make this suggestion, but it doesn't seem to be the popular suggestion, because everyone in this room has seen that we follow the approach in Tosus of turning our Esrog upside down. So Salvechika discussed why that should be. So why is it that this suggestion was not popular? Why don't we invoke this concept of negative kavana and say that that should fulfill our need to make the bracha in this very specific space? So he wanted to suggest as follows. He wanted to say that the halacha of overlas yasam, the halacha that the bracha has to be before the mitzvah, what does that mean? So one could try to sketch it out as follows. So a bracha is associated with what? It's associated with a mitzvah, meaning the fulfillment of the mitzvah, or a mitzvah action. What if I have a situation where I could split the two? I could have a fulfillment of the mitzvah separate or later than a bracha action, or I could have an action that comes first, or I could have a bracha that's one fulfillment with many different actions. Let's say, for example, if one assumes that Tziras HaOmer is all one big package. It's a topic we won't get into detail now, but if you assume the mitzvah of Tziras HaOmer is one big mitzvah, and yet we make 49 brachos, how do we account for that? Because it could be that brachos are connected to mitzvah actions, not necessarily mitzvah fulfillments. Even though I fulfill one big mitzvah per year, but it takes me 49 actions to do it, maybe that deserves 49 mitzvahs. So maybe a bracha is connected to an action rather than the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So therefore, maybe when we say the bracha has to be before the mitzvah, we mean it has to be before the action of the mitzvah. So even if I turn off the fulfillment until later, I turn off the power until I'm actually in the middle of the mitzvah, it won't matter. The requirement of over l'asiyasan means that it has to be before the action. And maybe the fact that I negate the fulfillment until sometime in the middle, maybe that's not going to fulfill this requirement.
Why did they suggest it as a...
So this is those Rishonim who suggested disagree, but the mainstream view that we don't follow this approach, it's a fair thought to say that it should be associated with the fulfillment of the mitzvah, but the approach of the accepted halacha not to do it is maybe assuming that the requirement of before the mitzvah means before the action of the mitzvah. Then he goes further, and he notes as follows. This is a very lumbish point. He says that the Gemara talks in Maseches Erevin about the whole parak named after this context. Let's say somebody finds tefillin. It's a parak in Erevin, a mostly tefillin. So he finds tefillin on Shabbos, let's say. So you want to know if you can find a way to carry it without lifting it. So let's say you want to put the tefillin on you in order to make it into a garment so you can carry it around. So let's say you have two pairs of tefillin, or you're concerned about the issue of Shabbos not being a time of tefillin. The Gemara discusses, is there a concern of Baal Tosfos? You know, put the tefillin on for the purposes of carrying it, but it's going to be beyond the requirements of the mitzvah, is there a concern of Baal Tosfos? So the Gemara seems to suggest that if you say mitzvah tzrichos kavana, so then you're okay. You'll have no kavana to mitzvah, just kavana to wear, and you won't risk a Baal Tosfos. It won't be going beyond the mitzvah requirement. So you could say, but didn't we just say a few minutes ago that we could say negative kavana works according to both possibilities? Right, that whether you say mitzvahs need kavana or not, negative kavana is a viable option. Because kavana maybe is just a default. So why should the Gemara assume that only if you say mitzvahs need kavana, this is an option? Let's say according to everyone, negative kavana. Have negative kavana when you put on the tefillin, and that will deal with it.
And mukhs is a rabbinic issue.
Yeah, some of the mukhs that we won't necessarily get into here. So you could say, says the Soloveitchik, that when you say a mitzvah is negated by negative kavana, there's two different versions of that. If you say mitzvah tzrichos kavana, so then negative kavana means the mitzvah is mamish nefer. But if you say mitzvos don't need kavana, and then negative kavana is just negating the presumption, it means that the mitzvah is essentially a full mitzvah, just you're turning off the kiyum, you're turning off the fulfillment. And maybe for the purposes of Baal Tosef, that's still a problem. Maybe Baal Tosef means you shouldn't do a Maisa HaMitzvah even without the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Which makes sense, because the whole nature of Baal Tosef means there isn't really a mitzvah to be fulfilled. It's just you are, so to speak, trying to fulfill a mitzvah. So the definition of Baal Tosef is to try to do the mitzvah beyond the requirement in a situation where it's not obligatory. So too, if you're going to do everything for the mitzvah but without the kavana, that's the definition of Baal Tosef. Okay, so that's a very long description. So if you say that this is what's going on, the mitzvah contains its own kavana, so then you could say the open question of whether mitzvahs need kavana or not. So if this is going to be a very lam de jour morning, I hope it's okay. This is very, a lot of very conceptual points. But you could say that maybe I should distinguish between mitzvahs minatorah and mitzvahs d'rabban. But if I'm doing a mitzvah d'oraisa, so then maybe that contains its own kavana. But a mitzvah d'rabban, maybe I might not say like that.
Why should you say that?
Good question. Because there is such a approach among the Achronim in general when it comes to Averos. That there are many Achronim who assert that if you do an Avera d'oraisa, if you eat non-kosher food, let's say if you eat pork, so that's what we call an Iser Chefta, that the item is inherently bad. That there's something spiritually damaging about this food that's treif min haTorah. But if you eat something that's also midrabanan, let's say you eat a chicken cheeseburger, it's midrabanan. So some assume, many assume, that that's not an iser in the chefta. The item is not bad. So this in the gavra, the individual is told not to eat it. The rabbi said, follow our rules, and we are obligated to follow rabbinic law. The Torah tells us, let's say, take the Rambam's position, lo sasur ben adavra, we have to follow what the rabbis instructed. So it's wrong for us to rebel against the rabbis and to do this. But the item is not bad. The item was neutral before the rabbis came and prohibited it. So it's not going to change now. The item is neutral. The rabbis, in this formulation, which is associated with the Nesivus HaMishpat, the Nesivus Mentis, it's a little bit of an argument, but the Nesivus is credited with this approach, and the Chassam Sofer, and the Ir Sameach, a lot of Akronim took this approach as well, that rabbinical law is an instruction how to behave. You should do this, you shouldn't do this. But it doesn't affect objects. Objects are neutral. But Torah law, God created the world and God created the objects, so the objects have an inherent status. So maybe one could say that when it comes to, let's say, prohibitions, so if you're going to eat, for example, if you're going to eat the pork, the shogeg, inadvertently, so even if you're not liable because it was not intentional, there's still a spiritual stain, there's still an effect, there's still something that needs to be fixed. Well, if you violate rabbinic law inadvertently, so maybe there's nothing, because you didn't rebel, you didn't know you were doing anything wrong. So if there's no rebellion, there's no disobedience, so then there's nothing to fix. That was the position of the Nesivus that was explained based on this distinction between the object and the individual. So So it's related a little bit. You could say that there's an inherent consequence of a Torah violation, while when it comes to, let's say, Bishul Akum, so there's nothing inherent there. There's just a prohibition for you to eat it. Right. So if you it's not about that. It's about the real world consequences. Maybe there are no real world consequences. Perhaps it's a little bit of a different application, but it would follow a similar type of.
What context did he say this?
He said it exactly the context we just mentioned. He said that if you violate Nisa Derabanan inadvertently, then it seems like you don't need to have any kind of a kapara. So it was explained by the later Svarim, the saying that because he believes that it's all about rebelling against rabbinic law, and if you're not rebelling intentionally, there's nothing to fix. Right. There's a fascinating example of this. B'chanan Wasserman talks about the fact that the Tosfos Mivamis and Davtes. So we know that if a Kohen is in a house and somebody dies, so he's got to run out. He's got to go out as quickly as possible. But let's say it's not a dead body. Let's say it's a Tumah Derabanan. It's a Tumah Derabanan, so the Tosfos that sounds like, okay, he doesn't have to run, he can walk. So what does that mean? Do you make we'll measure his speed. There's a certain speed he has to go for a Torah violation, but for a rabbinical violation, we move it down a notch. What kind of a distinction is that? So Rabbi Chanan explains that if it's a Torah violation, so then that's inherently damaging to him. He's got to get out of there as quick as possible because it's something that's poisoning him, so to speak. So he's got to separate as quickly as possible. But if it's a rabbinical violation, so he's not allowed to rebel against the rabbis by staying. So if he's in the process of leaving, he's not rebelling. So it doesn't make a difference how fast he goes. He could walk slowly, he could run. He's complying. I think it's comparable to the difference between a fire and a fire drill. If there's a fire in the building, so somebody wants to leave as quickly as possible to not get burnt. If they know it's a fire drill, so they're not going to run because they know they're not actually at risk of being burnt. They know that they have to just follow the rules. So they'll follow the rules by leaving. So that they don't have to run quickly because it doesn't make a difference how quickly you run as long as you are obeying. So that reflects that difference. So one could say, in a positive spin, let's say, okay, so if Torah law means the object carries the elements to it, and rabbinical law, it's all about you, so maybe for a din d'oraisa, so maybe I don't need to have kavana. Maybe the kavana is in the package. But for a rabbinical obligation, maybe I have to provide my own kavana. So I think it's a logical distinction. The only problem is it's the opposite of what you see in the recorded halacha. If you look in the Magen Avraham, so the Magen Avraham quotes from the Radbaz, an approach that many adopted, that mitzvos daraisa need kavana, and mitzvos derabanan don't need kavana. It's the opposite of what it just said. So why would they say such a thing? So presumably because we discussed the last week, because the whole question is a suffix. We don't really know, and our Gemara preserves it as a suffix. We don't know what the halacha is about mitzvos needing kavana or not. So if we don't know, so then okay, so it's a suffix daraisa. If we're dealing with a mitzvah daraisa, we should be machmir and require kavana. And if it's mitzvah derabanan, we could be mako. And as we mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch, again, every stage in the game, we're kind of preserving the mystery. So the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Kriya Shema are sugya. And in Hilchos Kriya Shema, the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Tamach, mitzvah that Kriya Shema needs kavana. So you could say, all right, so then that settles the issue. Here we just take one representative mitzvah in which to express that this is the accepted halacha, mitzvahs need kavana. But it leaves open all these possibilities, because it could be that the Shulchan Aruch is only saying it because it's a mitzvah deraisa, and maybe drabanans wouldn't say the same thing. And within the view of the Shulchan Aruch, this debate, Mishnah Berurah and the Chayyadim and others, that maybe the Shulchan Aruch only meant it b'torah suffik, that maybe the Shulchan Aruch is saying that since we don't know what the din is, so we should do machmir for the deraisa of Shema misafik, and not necessarily because we know that we need it. And l'chachila, perhaps, is the way it sounds like from the Chayyadim. Maybe l'chachila, we should machmir on misafik to have kavana. And maybe we're not sure that that's the halacha. The Mishnah Berurah himself, he thought that the Chayyadim was saying that as a limud chos, because for sure you do need kavana. So at every stage, the question is still open. It's not resolved in the Gemara. It's not resolved once the Shulchan Aruch says this about the Shema. It's not resolved from our Gemara. The question seems to be very elusive. It keeps every statement that would seem to point us in one way or another, you have this continuing open question. So it could be that's the more popular view is that the Magen Avraham quotes, that the Raisas we do need Kavana and the Rabbanans we don't, but we just mentioned a way to perhaps from a Lubavitcher perspective say the opposite, that the Raisas don't need and the Rabbanans do need. And I saw in the Stechemet quotes a view very mysteriously, the Chemed quotes from all kinds of Svarim all over the place. He quotes one view that says the way we just said it, that the Rabbanans do need and the Raisas don't, and he doesn't explain why. So we should say, based on what we just say, even though again, the much more familiar view is that the Magen Avraham quotes the other way around, that the Raisas do need and the Rabbanans don't need. Do you have a question?
I was just going to say, if we're applying it, the concept to all the Raisas versus all the Rabbanans, why does the Mishnah just mention Shema? Why not just say, if it's a derisive thing, this is derisive need, Kavana, then say it that way. Why limit yourself?
So who should say it? The Gemara should say it?
The Gemara should say
it. Yeah, like I said, it seems to be that we're just left with a mystery at each stage, that they could mean that. And our Gemara, for some reason, doesn't want to take the Mishnah as conclusive, that you could have read the Mishnah as a statement that a lot of different levels. It could have also it doesn't even want to let us leave thinking that Kriya Shema needs Kavana. Right? The Shulchan Aruch calls us Kriya Shema needs Kavana, and that doesn't give us a conclusion. Right? That still leaves us with a couple of possibilities. That the Shulchan Aruch only says about a Deraisa, the Shulchan Aruch only says in the Sofik about a Deraisa, there's a couple of different ways to interpret that. Our Gemara doesn't even want to let us go that far. Right? Gemara could have just said, okay, our Mishnah tells us we need Kavana for Kriya Shema, and then we'll still be left with the question of whether it's unique because of the Deraisa status or not. But the Gemara is saying, don't even assume from here that Kriya Shema needs Kavana, because, or maybe our Mishnah just means that it's a different level of Kavana. So the other distinction, we'll just end with this point, the other distinction that you also find in this farm, we mentioned the steer and the Rambam perhaps between Matzah and Shofar. So another popular discussion that enough the Kalim and the Rambam talk about and others talk about is that maybe it depends how much of an action is involved. That matzah is an action, and matzah, as the Gemara says, you benefit from food, kainena. So maybe that needs less kavana, but something that's more passive, maybe that needs more kavana. So hearing a shofar, you just could be in the shul, you're not doing anything, so we need kavana in order for that to count as a mitzvah. But if you're doing an action where all the facts are in place, well, then maybe that counts as kavanah. So that's very consistent with the whole idea of inherent kavanah, so to speak, that the more it requires you to do something in order to get there, we could say that everything that you've done points in the direction of kavanah. But the more passive you are, the more it's possible to say that you're just in the right place at the right time, so to speak, or that you could possibly be doing something else, like that Tosfos we just saw in Daf Yud-Beis. There's another explanation for what you're doing other than this specific mitzvah. So then maybe you have more of a requirement for kavanah. So that's consistent with saying that if you just happen to be there, or if you happen to be there but there's another mitzvah that you're doing, or another action that also could explain your actions, then you'll still need kavanah in order to be Yotze. So that distinction, these are two of the popular distinctions of the question. The question of whether mitzvahs need kavanah or not, if we're not going to answer in absolutes one way or another, either absolutely yes or absolutely no. So two of the common distinctions that you'll find are deraisas versus rabbanans, or actions versus non-actions. So both of them are relevant to this question, and maybe there's those presumed kavanah, maybe there isn't, maybe it depends on the circumstances. So we'll say a few more words about this, God willing, tomorrow morning. A few more important points to make, and then we'll try to move on a little bit.